Welcome back to the Citation Podcast. I'm Adrian Brine, Partnerships Manager at Citation, and today we're diving into one of the most challenging aspects of running a veterinary practice: people. Recruitment, retention, flexible working, conflict, performance. These issues shape the culture and success of every practice. I'm joined by an expert panel. We have Emma McGrath from our employment law team. We have Chris White from the Veterinary Management Group, bringing the management and leadership perspective. And we have Stephen Goodear from SPIVs, who is also a practice owner, offering insight into the operational realities facing practice teams today. Between them, they support hundreds of practices and have a real sense of what's happening across the profession. So, to set the scene, practices are telling us that three things are consistently causing pressure: recruitment challenges in a very competitive market, retaining great people in a tough clinical environment, and balancing flexible working with roads demands. So let's get straight into it. So I'm going to start with you, Stephen, and then I'm going to move on to Chris and then Emma. So Stephen, in your view, what makes recruitment so difficult in the vet sector right now?
Adrian, I think probably in the last couple of years, I think 3 or 4 years ago, we were at a very difficult time with recruitment in terms of, you know, every practice was struggling to get vets, nurses, practice managers to run the team. I think that's lessened a little bit just with the way things have changed, both in the pet market, clients, visits to the vet, and all of those sort of things. So I think we've seen a slight easing of that. I suppose that there are a few things that do complicate it. Certainly there's sometimes a discrepancy between, or it can be difficult to see between different practices, corporate practices, independent practices. Sometimes it can be difficult to evaluate when you're, as an employee, moving between practices. I think there's a reasonable difference between practices, and some of those can be hard to tell, a corporate practice versus an independent, good and bad in both sides of things. Certainly, you know, there are benefits to both of those sort of areas in terms of the benefits that a practice will offer. And sometimes some things visually look very appealing in one side of the table, and then moving to a larger practice that has more training might be better for one person versus moving to a smaller, more family-based practice might suit other individuals specifically. So perhaps part of the difficulty, which perhaps will always be the case, is getting a really good understanding of what each practice offers and being able to explain that to future employees, what you offer, what you don't offer, so that you can try and improve your the chances of you hiring successfully.
Excellent, thank you. And Chris, from VMG's perspective, what are you hearing from practice owners and managers about the biggest obstacles?
Well, first of all, what I would say is that retention is the best form of recruitment. And although the employment market seems to have improved a little bit, then obviously now it's about getting the right people into your practice. What our members are telling us, one of the challenges that they do find is bringing new people into the current culture. So they may themselves have negative team members, or there's some leadership within the practice that isn't as strong as it should be. So bringing people into that. Demands, of course, for flexibility and autonomy, the workload and the reality of the roles that they're trying to fill in their current form, and limited progression pathways, which, of course, these are all things that we need to consider when meeting the needs of Generation Z. So that needs to be looked at internally as well. Some people may have had a bad reputation from historical issues or the current kind of corporate bashing that's going on following the CMA investigation. That might well impact some practices. What I find really interesting about this is back in 2019, the BSAVA, RVC and Beaver did a survey on why vets were planning to stay or leave their current position. Now, when you look at the big factors, some of the things you can't do anything about: location, family, okay? There are plenty that you can. So the biggest was work-life balance, followed by the team, and then things like salary, support, standards of care. These are all things that you can do something about. What was very interesting at that point, and I hope it's improved, was that management itself was actually losing more vets than it was retaining.
Interesting. Thank you. And so, Emma, with your many years of experience in HR and employment law, are there any simple steps practices can take to make sure they're recruiting and retaining the right people, please?
Yeah, so I suppose to pick up on what Chris and Stephen have already been saying, you know, the whole recruitment process is the chance for the practice to say who they are and to sort of, you know, to really show people their culture. So that's really important to think about that right from the beginning. I mean, there's simple steps like things like, you know, adverts are accurate and specific, but I mean, it's thinking about the information you want to have in there. So, for example, there was a survey by Brightmind, which is a sort of an HR research company, that found that there was more quality candidates where the salary was advertised within the role, so within the advert. So that might be something to think about. But equally thinking about perhaps advertising that you're open to flexible working, if that is a possibility, or at least having that within the advert. It doesn't have to be that you'll specify what you're open to with flexible working, but it's just sort of giving that impression that you are willing to consider. And I appreciate that can be really difficult within a vet's practice to sort of to adjust the role. But, you know, it can be something that you can, with the right tweak, it can work for both the candidate and for the practice. And I guess as well, Stephen was talking about like benefits, perhaps thinking about a range of benefits. I think we're all touching on the fact that, you know, candidates are different and employees are different. So what might you might want to have like a sort of... you know, a package, for example. So, you know, some people will be attracted to being able to buy more holiday. Some people might be more attracted to like, you know, salary sacrifice of pension contributions or like additional wellness days. It just depends because, you know, different things are going to be appealing to different people.
Lovely. Thank you. Emma, I'm probably going to stay with you now when I look at the next topic. So in terms of managing tricky HR areas, what we're looking to do here is to manage tricky HR areas without overcomplicating things. So something we hear time and time again is that managing HR can feel like walking a tightrope. Too many processes and people get policed, too little, and things fall through the cracks. So Emma, how can practices handle key issues like performance concerns or flexible working requests in a fair, consistent way without turning it into a bureaucracy?
Yeah, so I think, you know, key is communication. You know, you want to be, to know your employees, you want to have an open door policy where people can come and speak to you. And all the sort of, you know, that you're absolutely right, there are set performance procedures, there's set flexible working requests. But really what you're trying to do there is set out things like for the employee to know the issues, for the employer to understand what's going on, for everyone to have their say before a decision is made, giving the employee a chance to improve, for example, with performance management. So all those things are actually, you know, you can transfer that back to informal processes as well. So it's all that, as I said, going back to that communication. If you can get on top of issues before they become too large, then that is far better for all concerned.
Lovely. I'm going to bring Stephen and Chris back in shortly. So I'm now going to move on to conflict management and communication. So conflict is a natural part of any workplace. We all appreciate that. But in a high pressure emotional environment like a vet practice, it can escalate quickly. So I guess if I start with you, Stephen, please, where do conflicts usually stem from? And what are some practical, realistic ways to de-escalate tensions before they become formal issues?
A couple of things, I suppose. One, literally coming on from what we were just saying about actually performance assessment and review, one of the big issues is that we just don't do it, is that we avoid it as practice managers and leaders, where we sort of hope and wait for things to get better. And I think it becomes much easier, which I suppose most of us learn the hard way through experience of messing it up, much easier to make sure that these communications are regular and ongoing, and we don't wait for the big yearly appraisal in the boss's office that's really scary, that we have much more informal, regular touching points where we can just say, can you do this? Can you do that? This would be even better if we did this. And I think that's a big way to being able to change anyone in the team's performance without it being the big once a year scary thing. Also, once a year is very, 11 and a half months is a long time from when something might have happened. So I think that's a very, just to do it. And there's always excuses. There's never enough time and you're always really busy. You know, one of the things we started to do was literally just block off a consultation slot in a nurse or a vet and said, this is it, it's fixed time, I'm going to come down to you. So one of the aspects of that was, it's always very scary having employee come up to a big boss's office, so we sort of flip it around the other way to say, okay, I'll come to you with a cup of tea and sit on the floor in the consult room and have a chat. And the first ones always feel weird, but within a short period of time it starts to become just the way we do things. So I think that's a big part of that. One of the other, I suppose, a lot of I think the conflict from within a practice tends to be the fact that there are what might be 20 or 30 people all working together, and a lack of understanding of the different personalities and attitudes and reasons why everybody's there. One of the things we do a lot of is a lot of personality profiling, which sounds really scary and weird to start with, but the reason we do it is it just transforms the way we understand the whole team. So we all of a sudden know why certain people get stressed and other people don't, or why they exhibit stress in a certain way. It also helps us with understanding, you know, most of the time we'll all have periods where we just think, if everybody just did it my way or understood me, there would be no problems. And everybody else is weird, and it's not me. I'm sensible, and they're all a bit odd. And once we started doing things like that, we could understand, right, here's these group of people, why they exhibit stress. So, you know, we have a group of, you know, there's lots of different profiling tools, the veterinary specific ones and not veterinary specific ones, and a lot of them, the discs and all those ones, the green people that are very sustaining energy people. And one of the things we found with those people as a group was that their stress, they tend to just bury the stress and hide it. They didn't reveal it, didn't talk about it until they exploded or imploded or just resigned. And that was very different to some of the other people. Some of the people who are the more outgoing people would tell me when they were stressed all day, every day, repeatedly. And although that sort of can be annoying, it was good because I knew when there was a problem. The other people, and in our leadership team, all of them have that sort of propensity. So by us knowing that, we could talk about it and understand that person X isn't going to say, I'll just keep piling jobs onto them, and that person will just keep doing them until they literally collapse or resign or burn out. But because we knew it, we could have a joke about it and, you know, have a system where we know this is how you're going to behave. So we changed our system. We did a 0 to 10 scoring system because they weren't going to, you know, when we'd say, how are you? The traditional answer was, I'm fine. But by gamifying and changing it a little bit, we could say, actually, and because I knew it and they knew it, it separated the personality out from how it was. So we could say, yeah, I am struggling with this a bit at the moment. So I think a big part of the conflicts is understanding why within a nursing or a veterinary team, you can have people with completely different motivations. They each enjoy completely different things. And as a unit, it functions amazingly well. But individually, two people can bang their heads. And if they don't understand that, I think that's a big source of conflict.
Excellent insight. Thank you. And Chris, I'm literally going to ask the same question to you. So where do conflicts usually stem from? What are some of the practical, realistic ways to de-escalate tensions before they can become formal issues, please?
Well, where conflicts stem from, as I think has very much been touched on by Emma and Stephen, is simply being human for the start, and then add a bunch of pressure onto that. And even well-intended people kind of misread tone, act defensively, communicate poorly. So we've touched on a few things there that are interesting. First of all, people's assumptions, their cognitive biases, the difficulty of communicating effectively across a practice with all sorts of different people, knowing people, understanding people, the different personality types and so on, change and uncertainty, lack of clarity and accountability that's quite common amongst roles. So those are the sorts of things that can cause it. And most conflicts don't really need formal processes. They just need those timely human conversations. And some of the ways of de-escalating, just emphasizing Stephen's point about using something like Insights or DISC or Contribution Compass. So everybody gets to know themselves and each other, and learning also perhaps to use communication frameworks like after action reviews, SBI, CEDA, these sorts of frameworks that help you be effective and efficient in your communication are good. Making sure that you clarify facts before you jump into assumptions, regular one-to-ones, that psychological safety culture that we spoke about in the health and safety episode, so that issues are raised early and dealt with appropriately. And finally, I think knowing when to get support, whether that be from a neutral third party or HR advice.
Fabulous. Thanks, Chris. Emma, anything to add on conflict management and communication?
No, I think the other thing I was just going to mention was about sort of, it's the same kind of ideas of like different people and a sort of a misalignment between what somebody's saying and what, you know, is being perceived, for example. So I was talking to a vet's practice last week where they had a veterinary nurse who they were talking to about performance issues. But there had been that arising of a misunderstanding because she had, from the manager's point of view, they were talking to her about legitimate performance concerns. From her point of view, she felt that she was being, you know, there's unreasonable pressure. She was being picked on. And it was that, you know, it was sort of like, well, where's the truth? Because both of them were very much coming from, you know, what they felt was a very valid point of view. And I think when we've already touched on this already, but it's all about, you know, communications, which we've all been talking about, but also about sort of, you know, having those good relationships as well. So that gives you that basis for having those kind of conversations. And I think as well, like, training is really important for managers as well, you know, how to give sort of constructive feedback, for example, you know, making it not sort of general comments about somebody's personality, but sort of, you know, on this particular day, you seem to react quite badly to that situation, as opposed to sort of, you know, you seem generally angry at the moment or something. So, you know, it is that kind of, that can be really useful in terms of helping managers deal with different employees.
One of the things you mentioned about misalignment, and I think one of the things it took me a long time to accept and realize is that the journey that your business goes on from a startup to one or two vets to 10 vets or however it is, changes enormously. Mm-hmm. And to accept the fact that not everybody who is on that journey is going to stay with you the whole time. And, you know, the analogy of sort of a bus journey that you're driving the bus. Some people get on for one stop, some for 10 stops.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And that sometimes people, they search a certain niche in terms of their role or where the practice is. But if the practice is going in a different direction, as long as you've got that clarity, and sometimes, you know, we've had conversations with the team where you were perfect for us then, we were perfect for you then, we are going in this direction, and some people don't want to, and that is perfectly okay to realize it's not you, it's not them, it's just, and that I always used to get very frustrated and upset that if we were now diverging, that there was a flaw in them or a flaw in me, or we were doing a bad job or something. So I think to be really clear about the alignment of this is where our practice's vision is, what we want to create, big, small, empowering, whatever it is, and make sure that the team know that, so that they and you can have a really honest conversation and go, if we're going on different paths, that's okay. Let's part company and you know, release with love and go into the world.
Yeah.
And it's not a problem for all this. So I think that misalignment's really useful. Mm. No, because it changes so much from day one to 10 years in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to sort of review how practices manage their staff as well. You know, something that, like you say, something that works for sort of when there's five people is very different to what you need for when you've got sort of 40 people in. So there's that, you know, that development. And then equally, sometimes, you know, there is, you know, I suppose going back to my point about misunderstanding, sometimes it needs that tweak and that sort of those conversations. You might be able to get somebody back on track, but equally, like you say, it's sort of, you know, that isn't always the case. And it just, you know, it is having that bigger picture, isn't it, of where you're going.
As you say, a practice is quite different when, you know, we start up and there's three or four of us and communication is easy because we're all in the building at the same time. No one has a day off and it's fine. And then you go forward 5 or 6 years and all of a sudden people have days off and don't, you know, we have a daytime practice and an emergency practice. And communication can be really hard because there are people who don't see other people in the team for 10 weeks at a time.
Yes.
So we have to have systems in place to say, I haven't seen you for 10 weeks, but we still work together. We keep updates with each other, and having a system in place for that. And as you say, just as the practice grows, I think to make sure that's really clear to say, you know where I'm going, I know what you want. And part of that, again, whether that's profiling or something else, to say, I understand the reason you come to work. Is it the same as it was previously? And what I'm doing, if it's not, let's talk about whether that can change or we can change or we part company.
And I just add that in these conversations, exploring perspectives is really important so you can reach some kind of consensus on what reality is, because as you spoke of there, where somebody is getting one perspective on it and somebody's got another, then let's explore both of those avenues and work out, you know, what's actually going on.
I mean, I think in the situation that I was talking about, actually there was very legitimate performance concerns, but there is that difficulty, you know, nobody wants to hear you know, concerns about themselves being raised. So that was sort of more, and again, that was probably, I was touching on before about training. I think actually the manager could have probably raised them in a more constructive manner, and that would have helped then in, you know, generally. So,
yeah, and the person themselves will usually blame external factors and the manager will usually blame the person.
Yes.
Exploring reality is really important.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Thank you. I now want to move on to the final area that I want to discuss with the three of you, and that's HR mistakes that are the most common. So, Emma, to start with yourself, Citation literally has hundreds of clients across the vet sector. So in your experience of helping these clients, what HR mistakes come up most regularly?
I think one of the things we definitely see is, you know, obviously practices are incredibly busy and having the time and resources to get on top of issues and to properly manage performance or any kind of conduct issues. I think, you know, there is that difficulty of having the time to do that. So what we do, you know, talk about a lot with our practices is about trying to speak to people more regularly. We're obviously, Stephen's already touched on that. but making sure that, I think as well, when you've got like a smaller practice, for example, or it's like a tight-knit team, to actually speak to somebody about, for example, sort of their attitude can actually be really difficult. It kind of opens up a sort of a different kind of relationship and a different situation. So I think it's about being constructive with those conversations, making them quite like part of the culture, so it doesn't feel such a shock to actually be spoken to about something. Having those regular catch-ups so that you can actually speak to people about what's going on for you with them. But equally, if they've got issues, it's like thinking about, well, where are you coming from with that? Is there any kind of support we can give you? You know, again, I'm coming back to knowing your employees and having communication is key.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's something we, particularly in the veterinary side, we duck it because we're not, that doesn't come naturally to us. Healing animals, very natural, but talking to another human being is not as easy sometimes as talking to a dog or a cat. And I think we just don't do it. I'm not sure whether from your experience it's that we do it and we do it terribly. That probably happens. But I think a lot of the times where I've made mistakes before is they're just not doing it.
Yes, I think that's right, yeah.
And I think it's weird. So often we'll see an issue that we want addressing and we ignore it and hope it will get better, or wait until the stress goes and then it gets better. And it's often, I find, interesting when we talk to the person and bring it up, they're slightly less, either not aware at all or slightly less aware than we were. And I think it was blatantly obvious, and the whole team thinks it's blatantly obvious. And that's just because they're coming from where they're coming from. And I think that's that make it early, make it frequent, make it part of the culture.
Yeah.
Make it, it's not the big boss scary office. It's just a let's have a chat. Today, it's just this was great. These five things you did were brilliant and appreciation to you. And on the other days, actually, this is something that we would like to be better, and it would work better because of X, Y, and Z. So it doesn't become, it's just frequent, regular.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that saves time in the long run because you are then, yeah, it feels like it takes more time, but actually you can then have, you know, productive employees who are brilliant at their jobs and, you know, sort of progressing the business forward, which is great.
And I think if you're not doing it, certainly for us, when you're not doing it, doing the first one feels like an enormous mountain.
Yeah.
Probably at the same time you performed cruciate ligament surgery. You just think, I don't know where to start. And I think the trick is just start, make it 5 minutes, don't have an agenda, just let's just chat. And even if the first ones are rubbish, at least the next one is getting better and the next one gets better.
I would just add to that, catch people doing something right. Because most of the time when you're going to have a conversation with people, they think, well, right, what have I done wrong? So the more you can use something like a framework like SBI, situation, behavior, impact, in a positive way, and the more you make sure you bring in some really positive things into these meetings, then the more comfortable they become.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Chris, that leads me wonderfully on to the next area. You're talking there about catching people doing things right as a practice manager, so a leadership behaviour. What else, in your view, Chris, do you think that practice leaders should be aware of?
I think, for a start, most HR mistakes are common. Therefore, they're predictable. Therefore, they're preventable. You know, common mistakes, for example, with documentation, maybe contracts no longer reflect reality. And also I've invented a word. I'm hoping this has become the word of the year 2026. So are we ready? I want this to go viral and people to use it. SOPINOs, okay, which are SOPs, standard operating practices, in name only, SOPINOs. This again comes back to that idea of we have work as prescribed, which is your SOP, and then you have work as done, which is actually what happens in reality. And that that separation means that you can end up with SOPINOs. I'm going to just keep saying the word. Things like poor record keeping, informal conversations, and those sorts of things can be common documentation mistakes, common communication mistakes. So avoiding difficult conversations, which we've spoken about a lot, but actually is the thing that happens a fair bit. Unclear or vague or indirect communication, again, coming back to people's preferred behavioral styles, communication styles. If you've got a particular one that's quite laid back, somebody might interpret that very differently if they have a different character. Not being human in interactions. So relying on cold policy type language, overuse of email, and not really displaying warmth when you're dealing with people. And common leadership behavior pitfalls, probably being too human. So the kind of counter side of that, where we're a little bit too human, we have our assumptions, our biases, our defensiveness, and we react badly. Sometimes you got to just take a beat. You know, in fact, often you should just take a beat If you think about the chimp paradox idea, don't let the chimp take control, let the human take control. Sometimes people confuse fairness with sameness. There's that equality meme. Do you know the one that I mean, where for equality, you just, there are people trying to peer over a fence and everybody stands on the same box, but because of different heights, some people see, some people don't. And then there's equity, which is you give the people that are shorter two boxes to stand on. So it's really important you understand what fairness actually means. And I think finally, a common mistake is probably treating HR as a last resort rather than essentially involving them at a fairly early stage to get some advice.
Excellent. And I've written that word down, subpoenas. I have one final question for each of you before I close, and I'll come to you, each of you in turn. So if you could wave a magic wand and give every practice manager one piece of training or support that would make a big difference, what would it be? And I'll start with yourself, Stephen, if that's okay.
My magic wand would probably be in the field of giving feedback and receiving feedback. So I think probably the ability to train our leadership team to give and receive amazing feedback and appreciation to their team, knowing how to do it, how specific to do it, and when to do it in a really simple way.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'll pass the magic wand down to yourself now, Chris.
I actually asked this question to one of the directors in the veterinary management group who owns her own practice. And she said what she would want is an AI hologram that knows all the SOPs, the practice values and the laws of the land, that produces rounded, fair and palatable answers for all HR questions and is available 24/7. To which I replied, haven't you got a practice manager? As that's essentially the job description. And to which you might reply, citation. But in all seriousness, confidence and capability in having those early effective conversations at all levels of the practice. Because often you know something's that's not right, but you're just not quite sure how to approach it, what to say, to come in quickly enough, and then it escalates.
Superb. Thank you. And finally, Emma, the magic wand is yours.
Yeah, thank you. So I think, just to build it on what's been said, I would sort of say, training around like proper investigation. And I don't just mean in terms of, a performance or conduct issue, but it's thinking about, that questioning mind, as a manager of sort of, why is someone behaving in this way? Why is someone off sick? Why do they want to change their hours? Why do they seem out of sorts today? And I think we're coming back again to, people are different, employees are different, and it's understanding your employees and having that sort of questioning mind about, who they are and what they want, which I think would then create some further magic of maybe a little bit more time in the, if you can build up those sort of really good relationships and communications.
Excellent. Well, look, thank you, all three of you. Back to me to close then. So look, HR is such a vital part of running a successful vet practice. And what we've heard today is that with the right support and clear communication, even the trickiest issues can be handled confidently. So huge thanks to Emma McGrath, Chris White and Stephen Goodyear for sharing their experience and advice. And to our listeners, if you need HR templates, guidance or hands-on support, please do head to citation.co.uk and discover how we can help support your practice. Thanks for joining, and we'll see you next time.